This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
You're listening to Kelly and Company. I'm Ramya Amuthan, and Margaret Weldon is joining me as my co-host today on the show. Happy to help you open the gateway to your weekend. It's a nice afternoon here at the AMI studios. Margaret, I was thinking more about the fingertip charging thing, right? Like using the sweat on our fingertips to help charge our devices. And I was thinking, you know, maybe it can power up the more strips you have. Like if I was using sweat from five of my fingers, all five or all 10, and connecting it to the same device, maybe we could get a smartphone charged. I don't know.
You know, that's something to think about, never mind the fingers. Let's do our toes as well.
Toes, yeah. It's just going to be walking around with cords all over you, maybe.
That's right, yeah.
Never mind. Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe they'll make it a bit easier. We'll find out. All right, yeah. Let's talk apps as we do every Friday. And John Beeler of The App Show is joining us.
This is The App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
John, lots of great stories on today's agenda, including this first one that we're going to start with. Twitter is testing out up and down vote buttons, I believe, for tweets on iOS. So what do we know about this, and what are these buttons meant to do?
Well, it's really meant to give, readers of your tweet the ability to say whether they like that tweet or not. The upvote, and they're still kind of testing different ways that this would be displayed, whether it's just shown as a like, and then the downvote would be like a thumbs down type of thing. So people could, you know, basically express themselves on a specific tweet. What I'm kind of curious about, though, especially for your audience, is how accessible are these types of things on something like Twitter? And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, is it something that would be important to you to be able to do that?
Well, first of all, my first comment to this whole concept is, aren't we trying to get rid of stuff like this? You know, when didn't Facebook and YouTube and a bunch of other places go through the whole concept of what happens if we remove the like button and remove the dislike button? Then why are we going back? But anyway, that's just my personal conversation. In terms of accessibility, I always found, John, that Twitter does a pretty good job. The native apps on the iOS are pretty good. But then there's also these third-party apps because of how much the community loves Twitter and finds just the whole concept of Twitter being very accessible, the platform itself. There's apps like Twitterific and other places where you can go to get more accessibility or simplified versions of Twitter, if you will.
Right.
So I always find that they do a great job at that kind of thing.
Going back to your original point, though, you're right. I mean, like Instagram even hid the number of likes people have, right? Because, I mean, it's also one of those things from a mental health standpoint, when people are chasing the likes, and say you tweet a lot and all you get is downvotes or dislikes, that's going to be, you know, a tough day at the Twitter office for you. So, yeah, so it's one of those things that I think they're sort of toying with it. And it's unclear when this would roll out wider. Some of the examples they have are kind of interesting, but it's also kind of one of those things like you can vote with your tweet as opposed to a simple thumbs up and thumbs down. I would much rather there's a conversation there than just a simple emoji.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. Like, I was thinking of that pilot exactly, the Instagram pilot where they were getting rid of it and finding literally that, you know, algorithms were changing. There was a huge shift in how people were feeling about Instagram and how people were interacting on it. So now this feels like, why? Is it because Twitter never had this and now they're just wondering what it would be like? But yeah, from a mental health standpoint and from everything we know about this kind of stuff on social, I would say it feels like we're going backwards.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of those things that, that I think people have asked for, you know, also like the edit button and all those other things, right? So it's not a new thing. And I guess they're just testing it to say that they've tested it. And presumably they'll come back with a, yeah, it didn't work or it was too negative for, you know, the experience of people. It also, just looking at some of the mock-ups that they have online, it really like clutters up the interface.
I do remember, though, that they have polls, right? Like Twitter has polls and things like that. Yep. So I wonder if this will be used similarly to that.
Yeah. Well, and also maybe only certain users can do it.
Okay. Yeah, true.
Right? Like maybe only...
But here's another thought, guys. Oh, sorry, John.
Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. Here's something else, though. Maybe if they can perfect this skill on Twitter, they may transfer it to other things. You know, like if you wanted to vote in the election and that kind of thing. Right? Because they're trying to look for ways to make elections and that easier for everybody. And one of the things that I remember hearing when some of the other provinces held elections, and I believe there was one that actually had to cancel it because of COVID-19, right? Because people couldn't go out because of isolation, or they didn't really want to go to the voting polls or anything like that. So I'm wondering if maybe this is sort of the beginning of something like that.
If it could expand, I wonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If security work its way into this.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Like, I can just create a new Twitter account to keep voting for my favorite candidate.
Oops.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. You never know. John, I understand that Instagram is starting to translate text into stories. What's this all about?
Yeah, this is something that just started rolling out globally. And right now, when you look at a regular post on Instagram, if it's in a different language, there's a see translation button at the bottom, so you can actually translate that text into your language. But it never worked for stories, and stories and reels seem to be where people spend the most of their time on Instagram nowadays.
Yep.
So they basically just have started doing this. What's really interesting about this, though, is it actually supports up to 90 different languages. So you really can have the global Instagram feed now and not have to worry about not being able to understand what's going on, especially if you're, say you're following a hashtag that you're interested in, for example. You can see, you know, diverse opinions on that hashtag or post on that hashtag in your native language, regardless of who posted it and where they posted it from.
This is good. I mean, there's a lot when it comes to the Instagram stories that I could point out in terms of accessibility limitations. I know that you can alt text your posts, but people, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you can yet alt text your stories, right? So,
correct. Yeah.
And because, like you're saying, the movement is everybody's doing stories now. You're tagging your stories, you're later on making your stories your posts, but that's kind of where a lot of people are going first, creating stories. And because of that, I'm going, well, I'm going to get off Instagram then because I can't tell what a lot of the visuals are because the alt text feature is not there yet. But fingers crossed and hopefully because they're getting this translation feature on, they'll continue to move it upwards for access.
Yeah, I think that's the sign on the door is that there's some progress being made here, and we could get to that point sooner than later, at least.
Okay. Anything else with the translation stuff? Do we have a bunch of languages or?
Well, it just sounds like it supports over 90 languages. Okay. I don't have a list of that, but basically, it makes the international audience pretty inclusive, I would think.
Okay. Lovely. And let's talk about DuckDuckGo. You're going to have to remind me what this is, but it's launching a free mail privacy service, including a free DuckDuckCom or duck.com email address.
That's right. So DuckDuckGo is it's basically a search engine that is very similar to Google, except it doesn't have any ads, doesn't have any trackers, doesn't have any of that nasty stuff that we don't like or that we want to turn off. And so they have an app that you can download for Android or iOS. And in there, there's an option to get on the wait list. This is sort of like a new beta feature that they've gotten. And this is kind of similar to what Apple does with their sort of their email privacy protection stuff that's just all part of the new iOS, where what DuckDuckGo does is they will give you, you know, say John at duck.com. I can give that away to all the spammers, to all online shopping stores, and it will automatically forward it to my real address, stripping out all the trackers when it sends that email to me. Mm. So apparently over 70% of any mailing lists that are out there, they all have multiple email trackers in there, so they can actually sort of monetize you and market to you more specifically by looking at your browser history, those other types of things. And what Duck.com is proposing is that let us do the heavy lifting. You just use this email address, and we will strip all that garbage out of there for you and send it to your normal inbox. So you'll get a nice, clean mailing list email without all that stuff that you don't want.
And do we know that it's that good? Like, do they have the reputation of it being that good? Because, you know, sometimes it's like having a spam folder in your regular inbox, right? Or is it regular mail service? And yes, 90% or whatever, like a lot of the stuff does go into spam, into junk. But there is a few that escape. So would you say DuckDuckGo is, they have like or Duck.com have a similar reputation, better or worse?
Yeah, they're pretty well respected as far as the privacy angle goes, because it's I can't remember, it might be like an open source project, and so basically they just have a simple mission: is basically we don't track you, we don't store anything about you, we just want you to use our system to have a more private experience on the internet. And the nice thing is that this particular, I mean, you might have to do something on your actual inbox to recognize that this has been a forwarded message from Duck.com.
Right. Okay.
To allow that to come through, so it doesn't go to your spam folder. But yeah, I would trust
in
this.
Spam.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's also probably maybe a good time to maybe think about it, like spring and summer or spring and fall is always a good time. Like, you know, when you're supposed to change the battery in your smoke alarm, maybe review all the mailing lists that you get. You know, I get so many emails from so many stores that I buy stuff from, and I kind of forget about it because they just sort of like live in that folder and I just ignore them. But you can go in and unsubscribe to them. And what this will do is at least strip away their ability to actually track you. And I think that's a good thing. And it's completely free too. So that's, and it's also cross-platform, so it'll work with anything.
That's
quick.
Sorry to jump in here, guys. I just wanted to ask quickly, like, is this one that has the same reputation? Because you mentioned Apple is kind of the comparison, right? Or similar things that Apple does. Is this another one that people would use alongside things that they're already using for security and filtering?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. One of the things that they ask you to do, and you know, it's optional, is to make DuckDuckGo your default search engine in your browser. So whether you use Chrome, Safari, doesn't matter. You can make that, instead of going to Google as your search engine, you can make DuckDuckGo your search engine. And it's been around for a long time. So, and my understanding, and it's got a pretty high reputation.
Nice.
Wow. Just quickly, John, we understand that they're adding third-party apps to Zoom in order for it to become a full platform. What apps are they adding?
Yeah, they're adding a ton of apps. I actually had an update the other day, and there was like a new tab in Zoom now, and it's basically an app store. And so anytime you're on a Zoom call, let's say primarily if you're, you know, at work, there's a lot of different apps like Asana, Dropbox, those kinds of things that you might need to access while you're on a call with somebody, saying, hey, let me go grab that file for you kind of thing. So these apps have been developed to be integrated into Zoom, so you don't actually have to leave Zoom to go get that stuff, because they're basically plugging in those that functionality right into the Zoom window. So they're trying to be more than just a simple video platform. They want to be a much more diverse and really kind of like your I guess for a lot of people, your work from home hub for all the work tools that you would use. Right. And they have, as of like the launch, which was just a couple of days ago, they have 50 different apps that they support. So it's a pretty diverse list. And they even have games that you can play in Zoom with your friends or colleagues. So it's not just work tools, it's other things as well. So they're trying to make it a little bit more interesting and have a little bit of fun, you know, so your casual Friday Zoom calls can have, you know, maybe you can play a game together that's built for Zoom, that type of thing.
Well,
so
because all of us had to use Zoom to literally do everything, right? From parties to conferences to icebreakers to webinars. Now they're like, okay, cool, we'll help you out with that. That's amazing. Soon we're going to be choosing between Google Suite, Microsoft, and Zoom.
that's right. Yeah.
John, thank you so much.
No problem.
Check out the App Show, John Buehler of the App Show. So check out the App Show Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. Up next, we have a special Friday community report with Julie Martin. She's going to join us from Pictou County, Nova Scotia. We'll be right back with that on Kelly & Company.
You've been listening to Kelly & Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.